the highs and lows of life. Today on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Raw.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
You don't have to go very far in your study of the Bible before discovering God's heroes not only have great victories, but also defeats. And that's true of us today. We all experience both highs and lows. Great success as we take steps of faith, but also fear and discouragement from time to time. Today on The Balanced Word, we return to Dave Rolfe's Through the Bible and Story series. In chapters 12 through 22, we have some of the highs and lows of Abraham's life. Let's explore them together. Here's Pastor Dave.
This morning, we're going to be looking at the story of Abraham. And we'll be looking basically from Genesis chapter 12 through 22. So obviously, we can't break it down individually in each chapter, but I want you to get the picture of the story. Abraham is one of the most important characters in the Bible. He is great in so many aspects. He's referred to for the rest of the Old Testament. In Genesis, there's a greater section devoted to Abraham than there is to creation, the fall, the flood, the Tower of Babel. All of that is focused on this one guy. And then throughout the rest of the Old Testament and in most of the books of the New Testament, Abraham is referred to as a great hero of the faith, as a great man of God. Picture this. God describes himself as being the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so by any measure, we go, Abraham, he was a great man. He had a huge impact. In the Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11, there's more space devoted to Abraham than almost everyone else in Hebrews 11 put together. A huge impact that he had. And so it's important for us to look at his life and see, what is it that made this guy great? What is it that makes him stand out as such a hero? And so we'll just run through the story quickly and then reflect on it a little bit. The story picks up in Genesis chapter 12. We see God coming to a place called Ur in Mesopotamia. And he picked a guy, Abram. Later his name would be changed to Abraham. Abram was chosen by God, and God said, I want you to leave Ur, and I want you to come west. Go west, young man. So away from his family, he said, leave your family, leave everything, and just come to the land, which ends up being the land of Israel. Come to the land that I have chosen for you, and I'm going to make you a great nation. And so it would take some faith, certainly, when you've never had any contact with God before, as far as we know, and now he comes and tells you, leave everything and head west. Now, when we look at the story carefully, combining some things in chapter 11 and then Acts chapter 7, when Stephen talks about this, we get some more insight. He didn't actually just immediately obey. God didn't say, okay, leave Ur, go to Canaan, go. And he just goes, okay, I went. One thing, he took much of his family with him. His father, Terah, went with him. His nephew, Lot, went with him. And remember, God said, leave your family. He took his family. But also, as you piece the story together, he didn't head straight west. He actually went north to Haran and stayed there until his dad died. And then he ultimately went south. But I'll give him a B maybe in terms of faithfulness, because he kind of pretty much eventually did what God told him to do. And that was something more than most of us would be willing to do. So that's Abram. But when he gets down to Canaan, one of the first things he does is there's a famine in the land in Genesis chapter 12. And so Abram heads down to Egypt because apparently there wasn't a famine in Egypt. And right away, this great man of faith decides, my wife's good looking. And I just know Pharaoh collects beautiful women in his harem. And so, Sarah, let's just say that you're my sister. I mean, not a real bold, courageous thing for a man to do, but he lets Pharaoh take his wife, Sarah, into his harem. Now, at this point, I would start going, this guy's going downhill, spiraling. He kind of obeyed, kind of didn't, and then he gives his wife to a pagan ruler. But God intervened, told Pharaoh, you're going to die if you touch that girl, and she's the wife of Abram. And so he comes and kind of rebukes Abram, but then gives him a bunch of cattle and stuff and says, get out of here. And so there he is back in Canaan, a little richer than he was before he left. And so, you know, that's kind of cool. Then in Canaan, he still has Lot. It's too crowded. The reason God told them to leave his family is there wouldn't be room for all of them in the area that God was calling him. So, but he took Lot with him. Lot was there and they were getting crowded. And so he says to Lot, look, you pick which direction you want to go and I'll go the opposite. Now that took a great deal of faith, I think, because where they were near Bethel, right near where the children of Israel crossed the Jordan to come into the land later with Moses, he's right there near Jericho and Ai. And if you look to the right, if you look to the north, it's the lush Jordan River Valley. It's beautiful. If you look to the south, to the left, it's a desert, the Judean wilderness. If you can see far enough, you can see the Dead Sea. And so instead of saying, I'm the older one, I'm going this way, you go that way, he said, you pick. And I give him credit for faith on that. Maybe he was trying to use reverse psychology on Lot, I don't know, but it didn't work. Lot ends up heading to the north and settled near a little town called Sodom, which is known for being a bad city that ultimately was destroyed in Genesis chapter 19. But he goes that way, and Abram heads to the desert and trusts that God is going to work that out for his best. So now we start thinking, okay, Abram's growing in his faith. Took a lot of faith for him to do what he did by letting Lot choose. So now we're seeing his faith developing. In the next chapter, in chapter 14, he ends up, Lot gets in trouble because some kings, there were five kings that went against the four kings in the Sodom region, took them all captive, and Lot became imprisoned by these kings. Now, you need to understand that when we think of kings and armies and countries, we think in terms of these massive entities that are really strong. So if you think five nations would get together and beat four of them, that sounds like a world war practically. What you have to understand, in those days, later on there were some fairly large, you know, armies, but in those days, Abraham wasn't a guy who had like massive soldiers. And neither were these other kings. Basically, when it talks about these kings, they are tribal warlords roaming around in these little areas. And the way we know that, I mean, among other things, in Genesis chapter 14, Abram goes to rescue Lot, and in the process, he defeats five kings and sets four kings free. And he did it with 318 soldiers. So it's like, it's like one of these Civil War war game wars that's going on, and he wipes these guys out. But it took faith for him to do that, and so we're still feeling pretty good about him. And then at the end of it, well, before this happened, right after he won the battle, he meets Melchizedek. This is a mysterious character that is likely an appearance of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament, what we call a theophany. He meets Melchizedek, this prophet, priest, and king, and he pays tithes to him, gives him 10% of everything that he has, and Melchizedek serves him communion, gives him bread and wine. So that's like, wow, that's pretty interesting. And then nothing more about it. It was one of these strange incidences, but you could see, hey, maybe this is building toward greatness. But in the end of the chapter, the kings of Sodom, the four kings, get together and they say, because you rescued us, we are going to give you all the booty from this war. Everything that we took from these other five kings, all the things that we recovered, we want to give it to you and you're going to be rich. Now we begin to see some faith, because Abraham, and really, I mean, there was nothing wrong with him accepting that stuff. A workman is worthy of his hire. He could have easily taken it. But Abraham says, no. He said, if God wants me to be rich, he will make me rich. I don't want you to be able to say, you made me rich. When you think about it, that's pretty amazing. It would be like if you're walking along on the street and you see a lottery ticket on the ground and you pick it up and you're like, wow, this isn't torn up or anything. And you just check, you get on your smartphone and you're like, this thing's worth $150 million. And you go, but, you know, if God wants me to have $150 million, he can give me $150 million. I don't want anybody to say, I'm rich because of the lottery. So you tear the ticket up and go, forget it. How many of you would do that? I would tend to think, wow, God gave me a winning lottery ticket. The devil had the money, now he's given it to me. And I could do so many great things for God with this money. Abram could have done that. He could have said, what an opportunity. God, thank you for these guys. But there was something in Abram that just made him go, I don't want them to be the ones to do it. I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to be rich. And I certainly don't want these kings saying that they made me that way. So, you know, that's a pretty heroic thing, really. And so then he goes to God and he goes, so, you're going to make me rich? What do you have for me? And God made a new covenant with him that was, he had promised before when he called him, I'm going to make a great nation of you and bless the whole world through you. But now he's more specific and he's talking about the magnitude of what he's going to do. And he makes this statement to Abram. He says, you want a reward? I am your shield and I am your great reward. You turn down money, you get me. And that's a great deal. And then he makes this covenant with him. He does tell him, someday you're going to have all these relatives and they're going to spend 400 years as prisoners. And so he predicted that, them being imprisoned in Egypt. But he says, and then I'm going to bring them out and then I'm going to do great things and the whole world is going to be changed because of your relatives. And so this, again, it's like, okay, we're building in faith. You can forget all about the guy that was ready to trade his wife in Egypt. Now he's learning. Now he's growing. So you come to chapter 16, and his wife, Sarah, comes up with an idea. She's like, you want to have a kid? I can't give you one, but I got a maid. And why don't you just go into her and have a kid by her? Now, Abram's no Arnold, but he's like, okay, if you want me to have the maid, I don't want to say no to you. And so he does that, and this maid, Hagar, has the son Ishmael, and we're going, God had Isaac, man. What are you doing? How could you have such a lack of faith to do something so stupid? But he did. And so the problems that came about because of that union with Hagar, because of Ishmael, are problems that we still deal with today. And then God, you'd think then God would have gone, I'm really disgusted about the maid thing, and I'm sick of you, and I think you just ruined your opportunity. But after that whole thing happened in chapter 17, God comes to him and he says, Abram, I'm not through with you yet. I still am going to do what I said I was going to do. And Abram's like, yeah, I know. I got a kid for you here. You want to bless him? And God's like, no, he'll be blessed, but there's going to be a son you're going to have by Sarah. That's going to happen for real. And Abram's laughing. He's like, come on, I'm in my 90s. So is Sarah. This is not going to happen, God. No offense. But all these promises that you made, here's an opportunity to do it through Ishmael. And God said, no. And he said, and I want you to do something that's going to mark you and your family forever. He said, I want you to be circumcised. And Abraham's like, what's that? He goes, well, maybe you don't even want to know, but it's, and it's like, try to convince your 13-year-old son Ishmael to get circumcised. And then how about a 99-year-old guy? Go ahead and get circumcised. And by the way, you're still going to have a kid. You're like, are you sure? I mean, this does seem to be self-defeating here. I'm not as steady-handed as I used to be. But he does it. And again, we're like, Abraham, that took so much faith. When you're surrounded by people that could conquer you, and you know you're going to be, you know, laid up for a few days, and you're taking this risk, and it's just like, and you still believe that Sarah's going to have a kid? Come on. But he did it, and so we go, that took some faith. I mean, you're not going to do that if you think God tells you to do that, you're heading for, you know, to get some pills that'll make you not think that. But he does it. So then the story goes on. And in chapter 18, the angel of the Lord, again, probably an appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament, because later he's called Lord. He's called God, Yahweh. But he shows up with a couple of bodyguards, and they come to Abraham's tent, and they're like, hey, I just want to tell you, God hasn't forgotten you. Sarah's still going to have a boy. And Sarah's back in the kitchen cooking some food for these guys, and she's like, here's this, and just laughs. She's like, I've had change of life already. There's no way. That's ridiculous. And she's laughing, and the angel of the Lord said, where's Sarah? Oh, she's back in the kitchen. Why is she laughing? And Sarah came out and goes, what? I'm not laughing. And he goes, yeah, you were. They ended up naming Isaac Laughter for that reason. So, but he says, Abraham, I'm not done with you yet. This is going to happen. Sarah's going to have a baby. In fact, she's going to be pregnant shortly. And so then, the angel of the Lord goes, oh, by the way, we're on our way to Sodom to destroy Sodom. I know you got a relative there, Lot, so you might want to let him know. We're gonna burn that place to the ground. They're horrible. So now Abraham, he's talking to God. And to me, this is amazing to show the personal relationship he had with God. He goes, God, you know, you're not going to want to destroy good people with bad people, right? So if there's 50 righteous people in Sodom, would you save the city? And God goes, sure. There's 50 righteous people there. I'll save the city. And Abraham's thinking, I'm sure Lot has like witnessed to some people. But how about 45, God? And God goes, yeah, if there's 45 righteous, no problem. Don't destroy the city. And he goes, well, 45, I mean, 40, how about that? You know, Abraham is dealing with God like you'd deal with a guy on Craigslist who's selling an old sofa. You know, and he's bargaining him down to 40, 30, 20, 10. Finally, he figured, okay, I can't push that. Lot, when I left him, he had servants, he had family. I'm sure there are 10 righteous. But it turns out later we find out really Lot was the only righteous guy there. And Sodom got destroyed in the next chapter. But it shows you something about Abram that he cared about other people. And he was like willing to go face to face with God and go, well, how about this? Now, we would look at that as being, oh, you should have just trusted. That's a lack of faith. But for Abram, I think it took a lot of faith for him to sit there and make a deal with God. But he went ahead and he did that. And I think that's kind of, you know, interesting. We get an insight into his personality, at least, and his stick-to-itiveness, shall we say. So it ends up in the next chapter, in chapter 19, Sodom gets destroyed. Lot escapes with his family. His wife turns into a pillar of salt. He kind of drops out of the story at that point. Now you get back to Abraham. Now I wonder, after that, he has this experience with God. He has this promise. Now he's certainly growing in faith by chapter 20, right? I mean, chapter 12, he was called. He's been through all these things. And now we're in chapter 20. In chapter 20, there's this little warlord in Canaan named Abimelech. And he's more powerful than Abraham, apparently. And so he, you know, tell Sarah, why don't you just tell Abimelech you're my sister? What? Are you kidding me? I mean, how many of us guys could stay married if we did that once? But you pull it a second time, and Abimelech takes Sarah as his wife into his harem. And then again, just like it had happened with the Pharaoh, God had to come and tell him, I'm going to kill you if you touch that girl. You're done. And so then he like calls Abraham and he goes, what are you doing, man? That's your wife. God told me that's your wife. And you told me it was your sister. But here, take her, get out of my land. And here, take a bunch of gold and everything, just in case. I did lust after her, so let me pay you for that, and you can go. Our man of faith? Really?
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com. Or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Let's get back to the story of Abraham and one of the greatest tests of his life.
So then we come to chapter 21 of Genesis. And Abraham, whose name, by the way, back in chapter 15 was changed to Abraham from Abram. Abram meant exalted father, and Abraham meant father of a multitude. Still didn't have a multitude. But in chapter 21, finally Isaac is born. And it was just, now they're laughing for joy because the son that had been promised, and for poor Sarah, having that being looked at weird by her maid and who had a kid by Abram and by everyone else going, yeah, look at you. Now she has that son that had been promised. And then Hagar and Ishmael split and went off and started drilling for oil in the Middle East. But so now it's like, this should be the happy ending. This should be like, finally, well, God made this promise back in Genesis 12, and we've had our ups and downs, but boom, we've got the kid we always wanted. It's Isaac, and he's the one that God's going to bless the world through him, and they're so excited. Until in the next chapter, Abram hears God's voice again, and God is telling him, kill the kid. Sacrifice Isaac to me. If you're Abraham, who do you tell? Do you think for a moment he's going to go tell Sarah, I got some bad news for you. By this time, Isaac's probably a young teenager. I'm going to have to go kill the kid. No, this kid is the one that fulfilled our lives. This kid is the one that the promises were made about, and it was fulfilled, and it's because we have this boy that now we're perfect. But he hears this voice from God. It's the same voice that had told him originally, get out of Ur and go to Canaan. It's the same voice that he had bargained with over Sodom. It's the same voice that throughout his life kept telling him, you and Sarah are going to have a child. He knew that voice well. He couldn't deny it. But now, in the toughest test of his life in what would ultimately describe the greatest act of faith ever. Someone who loved his son so much that he felt like that son is what completed his life was now being told to sacrifice that boy. What do you do?
We'll ponder over that very question next time we meet for the Balanced Word as we continue the story of Abraham. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.